The deal of the century has been released, partially. News and analysis. But first, it looks like Iran is the housefly taunting the hornet's nest and is feeling the sting because it is not easy to trump the U.S. Let's dive into both on this week's edition, the Mideast News Brief.
It's good to be back.
And it is wonderful to be back with all of you amazing Mideast News Brief listeners. I am your host, Winston R. Holland, and I had a wonderful time with my family on vacation, going on an Alaskan cruise. We were gone for about 10 days, spent a couple days in Seattle, which is just absolutely beautiful. I had never been before. It is extremely green, green everywhere, which is just fits perfectly with my outdoorish type personality. So that was a lot of fun. The Alaskan cruise was as well. We were on that cruise with a company that we distribute products for, and just got to hang out with so many amazing people that are also on our team. So that was pretty cool. Saw glaciers, you know, went on train rides through the mountains in Alaska for the excursions, and also ate way too much food. When every single meal is a buffet, there is a little temptation to overeat. So I'm kind of glad I am not that environment anymore. However, they had some pretty healthy food there, some pretty healthy options. So that was cool. I hope you guys enjoyed the past 2 weeks of shows. Well, I missed last week, which I apologize for that, but I just wasn't able to make that happen. The previous 2 weeks with Thani Abu Hamid talking about what the Bible has to say in regards to the modern state of Israel, episodes 17 and 18. If you miss those, they are a must listen because it's going to give you a perspective and kind of open up the scriptures to you about the real possibilities that 1948 is a fulfillment of prophecy, and it is worth a listen to. I learned a lot. I've already listened to them myself again, and I'm sure I will at some point again in the future. Also, the notes and the scripture references and all that is up at MideastNewsBrief.com. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. Also, please subscribe to the podcast wherever fine podcasts are downloaded, and probably not so fine podcasts are downloaded. We're pretty much everywhere at this point. You can even tell Alexa to play Mideast News Brief, and you will be on your way to listening to the latest episode. And also, I just have to say, I got hit with something yesterday. I don't know what it was. I think it was something I ate the day before yesterday. I'm getting better, but I will say my energy levels are way, way, way down. I almost didn't even do the show today, but it's literally been a month since I've done a new show, a broadcast on the news. Episode 16 was the last one, and that was like a month ago, which that was actually a pretty good broadcast. I felt like just kind of dissecting what was going on with the Israeli election, something we're certainly going to be talking about more as we get closer to those, I believe, mid-September. And unfortunately, we're going to have to wait for the whole deal of the century, Kushner's peace plan, until after that. But we do, as I mentioned in the intro, we do have the partial plan. We have part of the plan, which is the economic portion of the plan, which we're going to get into it, of course, but I kind of partly like, and I partly am just curious on a lot of things. Curious on a lot of things about how this is going to actually work out. That being said, I've learned not to underestimate our current president of the United States. So I'm not going to make any harsh judgments either way, whether this thing could actually work or not. Time will tell, right? Trump says he's going to move the embassy to Jerusalem. Okay, time told. Trump says he's going to recognize Jerusalem as a capital of Israel. Well, time told us. Same with the Golan Heights. And now Trump actually has a neighborhood in the Golan Heights named after him. So I believe that happened last week. Trump Heights. So, I mean, really, and again, as I've said, all they had to do is previous presidents is do the right thing, and they could have had the same thing happen. It wasn't like this was some unbelievable stroke of genius, even though I do believe the president's a pretty smart guy. It's pretty simple. It's kind of like, well, if you lower taxes, then the economy is going to be more stimulated. It doesn't take a genius to figure very simple concepts out. But anyway, I'm not going to get into all that, of course. But before we get into the first phase of the deal of the century, let's talk a little bit of history of what has been happening in our illustrious relationship with Iran over the past couple of weeks, and then we'll jump into where we are today and make clear what the beautiful, I would say glorious, round of new sanctions against the Ayatollah himself. Yes! You got to be a little bit excited about that, that he himself is going to feel the pinch financially from all of this. Alleluia. And it's just a beautiful statement. No other president would have done that, would have had the guts to do that, but President Trump. So thank God for him. So what exactly are those sanctions, and what impact may they have or not have? So, but again, let's go back to a little bit of history. So while I was floating in the Pacific Ocean on the way to Alaska, Iran is alleged to have attacked two oil tankers on the Strait of Hormuz. So what is the Strait of Hormuz, if I'm even pronouncing that correctly? So the Strait is it's basically just a body of water between the Persian Gulf, which is between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and the Gulf of Oman, which is like on the northeastern border of Iran, which then leads out to the Arabian Sea and eventually to the Indian Ocean. Honestly, I would just look up, the Strait of Hormuz. Picture is certainly worth 1,000 words on that. But when you do look it up, you're going to see why it matters and why and how easily actually some countries could get together and or a country could block that off. And what happens when you block off the Strait of Hormuz? Well, you are literally cutting off the passage of about 1/5 of the world's oil supply. Roughly 18 to 20 million barrels per day. And so stopping the flow of oil coming out of the strait would be a 10.0 on the Richter scale of stability of oil markets and probably a whole lot of other markets. It would be an utter disaster. Gas prices would skyrocket. Oil prices would skyrocket. So we really don't want that to happen. Now, that being said, Iran and their shenanigans and cutting off oil is becoming less and less of a threat to the United States. Do you have any idea why? If not, let me tell you. The reason why is because we, the United States of America, are now the number one producer of oil in the world. Something to the effect of, 16 million barrels a day or so? This is why it's so important for us to be energy independent. So we're not chained to these terrorist autocratic regimes in the Middle East, to where if they can block off this little area, this little strait, they can block that off and put the world in a frenzy. The less we are dependent on them, the less that is going to impact us. All right, so what happened? On the morning of Thursday, June 13th, day before I came back, two oil tankers off the Gulf of Oman were attacked by an unknown party. The U.S. Navy's 5th Fleet, which is based in Bahrain, received, received distress calls from two tankers at 6:12 and 7 a.m. The Norwegian-owned MT Front Altair and the Japanese-owned Kokuka Courageous. The 23 crew members of the Altair and 21 members of the Kokuka were all successfully evacuated with only one reported injury. So that's pretty phenomenal, actually. Two tankers get attacked and nobody, no fatalities, and only one guy comes out with an injury. That's pretty remarkable. Thank God for that. You may have seen in the news that about a month prior to the June 13th attacks, there was an attack on four tankers off the coast of the UAE, which the U.S. accused Iran of committing back then. So who do we accuse of committing this latest incident? You guessed it. That would be Iran. So the Thursday that this happened, coincidentally, an important meeting was happening between the Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, and his most holy exemplar of all things Islamic, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. He was there essentially to ease tensions between Tehran and Washington. Seems like he wasted a lot of private jet gas money on that trip. I don't know what he's going to do. Maybe he did something that was effective, but essentially, I mean, this is a terrorist regime, but, you know, maybe terrorist regimes can have their arms twisted in some respect. There might be some things that he's able to do that we don't know about. But on Friday, President Trump made an appearance on Fox and Friends on his birthday, June 14th. And here's what he had to say about Iran. Michael, if you would, cut one.
All right, let's, Mr. President, talk about something in the news today. We've seen those images of the oil tankers on fire out in the Gulf. And Iran says, hey, don't blame us for this. We didn't do it. We think it was an accident. I know Mike Pompeo has blamed Iran. What sort of evidence do we have that they've done it? And what are we going to do about it?
Well, Iran did do it, and you know they did it because you saw the boat. I guess one of the mines didn't explode, and it's probably got essentially Iran written all over it. And you saw the boat at night trying to take the mine off and successfully took the mine off the boat.
Yep.
And that was exposed, and that was their boat, that was them. And they didn't want the evidence left behind. I guess they don't know that we have things that we can detect mm-hmm. in the dark that work very well. So we have that, and I know you put it on. So, no, it was them that did it.
All right, so what is he referring to when he refers to the mines? Well, essentially, there were mines placed on the ships. We actually have photo evidence of that. And again, all of these links, all this information will be up at MideastNewsBrief.com. So there were mines placed on the ships to aid at least in part to sinking them. And one of those mines did not go off. So according to Fox News, a U.S. official told Fox News an Iranian gunboat approached the Kokuka Courageous later in the day and removed the unexploded triangular-shaped limpet mine, the same type of mine used to damage four other tankers in the Gulf of Oman last month, which, you know, again, our intelligence told us that that was Iran also. The official who requested anonymity to discuss sensitive information said the suspected Iranian vessel did not bear any flags, nor did the crew members wear any uniforms. But the class of vessel, what the U.S. military has called a fast inshore attack craft, FIAC, was the same type of ship used by Iran to harass American warships in the Persian Gulf in recent years. All right, so based on their intelligence and their assessment, Iran did it. And I think, you know, there's some pretty good evidence for that. They probably did. Now, are they denying it? Of course they are. With their foreign minister, Javad Zarif, even saying that, quote, it's suspicious doesn't begin to describe what likely transpired. Remember, Javad Zarif, he didn't coin it, but people coined it for him, the idea of smile diplomacy when the nuclear negotiations with Kerry were going on. He was always out there, and he always just had this big smile on his face. And I think it was obviously very calculated because we tend to trust people that are happy and trust them more, at least that are happy and smiling. They seem like good-natured. Oh, we're partners in peace that you can trust. And this is a guy I do not trust any further than I could even tap his shoulder. So, But yeah, so they are categorically denying it. The U.S. Central Command, CENTCOM, released a statement saying, quote, the U.S. and our regional partners are assisting in the response to attacks in the Gulf of Oman. The U.S. and the international community stand ready to defend our interests, including freedom of navigation. It goes on to say that, quote, we have no interest in engaging in a new conflict in the Middle East. Amen to that. And added, we will defend our interests, but a war with Iran is not in our strategic interests, nor in the best interests of the international community. Amen and amen. Of course, this is all Trump's fault, right? This is all Trump's fault. My favorite member of Congress, Ilhan Omar, blamed Trump for the incident, not Iran. I mean, think about this. This is the world that she lives in. Iran attempts to sink oil tankers, and we have very good evidence of that. And she blames Trump, not the people that actually did it. Really makes you wonder whose side she is on. And I don't know if you saw any of the presidential, the primary debates last night. I saw kind of, I just kind of heard some clips here and there, but wow. If you want to talk about whose side the Democrats are on, it sounds to me like the ordinary Americans are not high on their list. I certainly am not. They don't care about me, that's for sure. And I'm a U.S. citizen. But I digress. We're not going to get into that. There are plenty of other shows covering that. So Omar blames Trump. So just, and honestly, please continue to pray for this woman. She potentially has some mega legal problems with her immigration fraud. She was even asked if this individual that, I forget his name, but that her brother, I believe, that she was accused of marrying, asking if he was her brother, and she would not even respond. She wouldn't even respond to the question. So please pray for her. And if we don't think God can change people like Omar, then what are we even doing believing in Christ in the first place, right? If he can change us, he can change her. Plain and simple. I mean, look, ISIS fighters are coming to Christ. The Kurds, actually, and this is from another show that I was listening to, this guy that goes into like Afghanistan and Iran, and he just goes into the craziest places to preach the gospel. The Kurds are so open to the gospel. Like now that the Islamic State has been moved out, there's this huge opportunity for the good news of Jesus Christ. So don't put the power of Jesus Christ past anyone. All right. But she needs to focus on blaming tyrannical regimes for the things that they do, rather than like blaming Trump for all the world's problems. I mean, again, this is a lady that is, she is for Maduro in Venezuela. She is for a brutal dictator over a guy who can bring some semblance of freedom to that country. It's very, very sad. All right, so if that incident wasn't enough, the sinking of the two oil tankers, on Thursday, June 20th, just over a week ago, a U.S. unmanned drone, the RQ-4 Global Hawk, was shot down because it had supposedly entered sovereign Iranian airspace. This is what the Ayatollah's propaganda arm, the Iranian Republic News Agency, this is what they had to say. Shooting down of the U.S. spy drone has a clear message, and it is the fact that the defenders of this country are ready to give decisive response to any aggression, Major General Hossein Salami said in a local ceremony. He said that enemies have no choice but to respect Iran's territorial integrity and interests. Iran is not seeking war with any country, but its armed forces are ready to defend the country against aggression, Salami added. Okay, so that's their take, right? But the U.S. had a bit of a different take. And I don't trust a letter that rolls off the tongue of the largest state sponsor of terror in the world. If I have to trust what a government says, I trust ours more. I mean, again, government's government, so I'm not going to ultimately trust government. I don't even, I love Trump, but I don't trust necessarily everything that comes out of his mouth, right? So, but I definitely trust our government more, especially with the current administration. But before I get into our response, I want to talk about the drone itself, the RQ-4 Global Hawk, for just a minute, because I just think it's good as citizens for us to have an understanding of the different military equipment our tax dollars are going toward. So, and it's actually a pretty amazing piece of technology. I'm just going to read a few snippets about it, but this is from the U.S. Air Force website, and it says, the RQ-4 Global Hawk is a high-altitude, long-endurance, remotely piloted aircraft with an integrated sensor suite that provides global, all-weather, day or night intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capability. Global Hawk's mission is to provide a broad spectrum of ISR collection capability to support joint combatant forces and worldwide peacetime, contingency, and wartime operations. The Global Hawk provides persistent, near real-time coverage using imagery intelligence, IMINT, because there's a there's an acronym for everything in government, signals intelligence, and moving target indicator sensors. So it's a fairly sophisticated piece of equipment. It can survey as much as 40,000 square miles, 100,000 kilometers squared, of terrain a day. That is an enormous coverage area. An area the size of South Korea or Iceland. And that's according to the Wikipedia entry, not the U.S. Air Force, so I can't. And there wasn't a footnote on that, so I couldn't independently verify that. But, I mean, I believe that 40,000 square miles is absolutely enormous. And, get this, flyaway cost of $131.4 million per the Government Accountability Office report. This wasn't some toy remote-controlled airplane or drone you pick up at Brookstone, right? I mean, this was not chump change. And our president was not happy about it. That morning at 7:15 a.m., Trump tweeted out one phrase, Iran made a very big mistake. Also at a press conference that day with Justin Trudeau, here's what the president had to say.
There are two Canadians that are in jail in China right now.
Iran made a big mistake. This drone was in international waters, clearly. We have it all documented. It's documented scientifically, not just words. And they made a very bad mistake.
Mr. President,
you'll find out.
Are you willing to go to war with Iran?
You'll find out.
Mr. President, there are documents.
Obviously, you know, we're not going to be talking too much about it. You're going to find out. They made a very big mistake.
Look, I trust Trump over the Ayatollah on this one and pretty much everyone. Now, this here is from Brett Velisovich. He is the at the drone warrior. So Brett is a U.S. Army vet and drone expert. This is him on Fox actually talking about why we would not have violated international airspace with this drone, and especially point two that I think he makes on this quick clip makes a lot of sense.
Let me be the first to tell you, as someone who has experience with the RQ-4, there's still this confusion that we were operating in Iranian territory. I can tell you firsthand, we would absolutely not operate an RQ-4 drone in Iranian territory. One, because of the tensions are so high, there would be a direct order to the Air Force personnel to stay away from that. And two, because it's not a stealth drone. I mean, the fact is that any radar that a government has the capability of picking it up. Surface-to-air missiles can strike it. So it's not the type of drone that can't be shot down because it loiters.
I mean, really, how idiotic would it be to send a $130 million drone that is not a stealth drone, take it out of international airspace, and fly it into a sovereign terrorist nation that just so happens to be the largest state sponsor of terror in the world. So we don't want tensions with Iran, and it's not a stealth drone. So that would be completely idiotic. Now, Trump's critics could say, well, Trump is idiotic, blah, blah, blah. Even if you think that about Trump, you really think that about all the people that are in charge of this drone? Highly, highly unlikely. They didn't get there by being complete and total bloviating idiots. So, now, Trump did give some indication that it could have been a mistake, but that the U.S., quote, would not stand for it. At the time, remember, the pundits, they were all reeling about Trump talking tough, but then not following through. I mean, amazingly, even Democrats wanting Trump to go to war with Iran. And I don't know if you saw that clip or not, but when Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi came out of a meeting with Trump where they were talking about the possibility of attacking Iran, and then there's a video of Chuck Schumer doing some kind of happy dance behind the SUV with Nancy Pelosi, and that very well could have been referring to Schumer's excitement about convincing Trump to go to war with Iran, because that would give the Democrats so much to hammer him on. But thankfully, that did not happen. And I just love the fact that this president has the viewpoint that he has had for a long time is being actually implemented in the Oval Office, not to where, like the Democrats, where you're anti-Iraq war, anti-war, anti-war, anti-war. But then you now, with the Republican administration in office, now you want to go to war. Now he's had a very restrained and calculated and careful foreign policy. And we saw that first, remember, when Trump ordered attacks on a missiles production facility in Syria. Instead of, he just blew that up instead of actually like jumping into the Syrian civil war. I was very happy. Now, you know, there's the question of whether or not Assad actually did gas his own people and all that. I would not be surprised if that was the case. But either way, let's say he didn't actually, and it was just some big conspiracy or whatever, which honestly I have a hard time believing. But let's say that it was. Well, at least all Trump did in response was blow up some facilities and not jump us in to a civil war that we don't need to be in. He's had some just a restrained foreign policy that I really like, and I love the fact that, like Reagan before him, Trump likes to use soft power. Now, soft power is still strong. It's just called soft because you're not actually shooting missiles and blowing up people and blowing up facilities. Soft power is power other than military force. And that is what Trump decided to do in this situation. So, but I'll get to that in a second. So Olivia Gazis, who's a CBS reporter, she tweeted out on June 20th, 8:52 p.m., CBS News confirms, says there is every indication the United States was about to launch a limited strike against Iranian surface-to-air missile sites Thursday night. But the U.S. stood down at the 11th hour for still unexplained reasons. Now, Trump did come out and explain it, but this is right after they learned about it. So, look, Trump was ready, apparently, to respond, and even to respond with hard power. I don't know, is that the opposite of soft power? I'm not totally sure. But he was willing, apparently, to respond with military force, and he pulled back. The FAA also issued a statement, basically giving a no-fly zone. The FAA has issued a notice to airmen prohibiting U.S.-registered aircraft from operating over the Persian Gulf and Gulf of Oman. The notice applies to all U.S. carriers and commercial operators. Well, that's not very good for certain economies, is it? So, okay, so what happened? I'm actually going to read an excerpt from the New York Times that I don't do very much around here, but bear with me because I think it's worth fleshing out a bit. Here's an excerpt from a New York Times report that says, President Trump approved military strikes against Iran in retaliation for downing an American surveillance drone, but pulled back from launching them on Thursday night after a day of escalating tensions. As of late 7 p.m., military and diplomatic officials were expecting a strike. After intense discussions and debate at the White House among the president's top national security officials, you got the doves and the hawks, right? And congressional leaders. Oh, and by the way, I love the fact that he doesn't surround himself with just a bunch of yes men, right? He's more of, he has more restraint in foreign policy. You know, like he said, maybe, I'm sure that was an exaggeration. John Bolton wouldn't take on the whole world at once, but he's probably a little trigger happy, you know? But at the same time, it's nice to have a guy like John Bolton so that when you do need to go to war, when you actually do need to respond with military force, you've got the cojones to do it. And Bolton certainly does, probably a little too much, but again, I like the fact that he's got people with differing opinions, and then he can weigh their differing opinions and make a judgment. Of course, I'm especially glad about that since I think he's making correct decisions. I probably wouldn't be as happy about it if he was making bad decisions. The operation was underway in its early stages, that is, the attack, when it was called off. A senior administration official said, planes were in the air and ships were in position. Oh, there you go. But no missiles had been fired when word came to stand down, the official said. It was not clear whether Mr. Trump simply changed his mind on the strikes or whether the administration altered course because of logistics or strategy. It was also not clear whether the attacks might still go forward. The strike was set to take place just before Friday in Iran to minimize risk of the Iranian military and civilian casualties. All right. So what did the man himself come out and say about what happens? And I hope you guys don't mind. I realize I'm kind of doing a bit of a history lesson of the past couple weeks, but I believe context is extremely important. You know, when it comes to reporting the news and events, essentially you're reporting a story. Right now, hopefully, it's a true story, and so that's why you try to rely on reliable sources and so forth, but I hope this helps you guys to put it in context, to get an idea, just kind of have a cohesive, overarching view, because it's very easy to forget things, it's very easy to be distracted by a zillion other news items, so hopefully this is a helpful and good kind of summary of the past 2 weeks. Really, when news is done right, it's really you're reading history. So, and that's kind of how I feel that what I want to do with this broadcast is that it's part history, part news, or it's really kind of the synergy of history and news, because we want it to be as accurate as possible. So anyway, I realize I'm not talking about up to the minute right now. We're going to get to where we are right now in just a second, but I hope this helps you guys provide a historical context for going forward. All right, so what did Trump say about what happened? The next day, he took to Twitter to clarify. He said, quote, President Obama made a desperate and terrible deal with Iran. Boy, did he. Gave them $150 billion plus $1.8 billion in cash. Where do you think all that money was going? Oh, surely not to support Hezbollah in Syria and in Lebanon and Hamas and the Gaza Strip and their terrorist proxies all over the world. No, no way that $1.8 billion in untraceable money, surely that wouldn't have gone to any nefarious actors. No. Anyway, Iran was in big trouble and he, Obama, bailed them out. Gave them a free path to nuclear weapons, and soon. That is true, because of the sunset provisions in the Iran nuclear deal, they could go back to enriching uranium to the levels that they need to for nuclear weapons quick. Instead of saying thank you, Iran yelled, death to America. I terminated the deal, which was not even ratified by Congress, and imposed strong sanctions. They are a much weakened nation today than at the beginning of my presidency. That is the truth. And when they were causing major problems throughout the Middle East, now they are bust. On Monday, they shot down an unmanned drone flying in international waters. We were cocked and loaded to retaliate last night on three different sites when I was asked how many, or when I asked how many will die. 150 people, sir, was the answer from a general. 10 minutes before the strike, I stopped it. Not proportionate to shooting down an unmanned drone. I agree. I am in no hurry. Our military is rebuilt, new, and ready to go. By far the best in the world. Sanctions are biting and more added. Last night, Iran can never have nuclear weapons, not against the USA and not against the world. All right, so that's the story Trump put out. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not, but it very well could be. So we'll just kind of roll with that narrative for now. Trump, though, actually did retaliate against Iran. We're talking about, quote, soft power, which, oh, the Ayatollah is going to be feeling is not soft at all. Again, you guys got to understand the historic nature of this. For the first time in history, the ultra evil terrorist head of Iran, Ayatollah Al-Khamenei, may he live forever because he repents and puts his faith and trust in Jesus Christ, the Son of God, not because he's a terrorist, for the first time ever, now has sanctions targeted against him. Yes, him, and not just him, but also his inner circle. This is a, in my mind, this is a beautiful, just beautiful display of power where you can literally hurt an enemy nation without hurting physically anybody. Look, it's what Reagan did with the Soviet Union. We did not win the Cold War by attacking and invading Russia or as a response to their aggression to us. We crippled their economy because we had a president that believed in peace through strength. He believed in freedom for the Russian people. I don't think it wasn't just America that Reagan cared about. He was very concerned about the people across the world having freedom. And ultimately, when it comes to Iran, that is my hope and that is my prayer that we continue to put the squeeze on this terrorist regime and we see them fall. And we see a more free democracy of some type put in their place. All right. I will say this, though. God is on the move in Iran, in the underground churches. I'm actually going to be talking about in a future show some of the stuff that is going on spiritually in these, I mean, dark places that we would never even consider visiting. How even Americans are over there seeing unbelievable works and moves of God. Look, you're never going to read about that in foreign policy. You're not going to, for the most part, read about that in Fox News even. Even most conservative websites aren't going to be talking about the miracles and the healings and the salvations of many people and the missionaries being raised up. Look, don't be surprised. Maybe you heard it here first. Don't be surprised if God turns the Middle East into a Christian region, majority Christian region. Don't be surprised. If our God can speak and the universe is created, the more you learn about science, the more you realize how unbelievably complex, unbelievably purposeful, and the designer had to have just been an intelligence beyond our even minor comprehension. So anyway, all that to say, amazing stuff is going on in the Middle East. Pray, be positive. There's good stuff going on. And again, as we're going to see when we talk for a few minutes about the deal of the century, I don't have very long. But here's what happened with the Ayatollahs. After pulling back, so this is from the Daily Signal, June 24th, Trump ratchets up sanctions on Iran's top Ayatollah, his inner circle. After pulling back from the brink of a military strike last week, the Trump administration is targeting the assets of Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, along with his closest associates, through a new round of sanctions against the world's biggest state sponsor of terrorism. Quote, our issue is not with the people of Iran. We are not looking at creating issues for the people of Iran, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin told the Daily Signal during a press briefing Monday. Having said that, we have sanctions against bad behavior, and there is no question that locking this money up worked last time, and there is no question locking the money up works now. Okay, money talks. how much? We're going to get to that in a second. How much money could curb the bad behavior of a terrorist, of a, like a maniacal, crazy terrorist? In announcing the executive order, Trump said the new sanctions, quote, will deny the supreme leader and the supreme leader's office and those closely affiliated with him and the office access to key financial resources. Mnuchin announced that the U.S. would be freezing the assets of three top officials in the supreme leader's inner circle, as well as five additional military leaders. All right, so here is Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin with the announcement and details and even a little bit of the Q&A. So, Michael, if we could do cut two.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
So I think, as you know, I just left the Oval Office where President Trump signed a new executive order authorizing even more expanded sanctions against Iran. So now, along with our existing sanctions authority, we have additional sanctions to go after the Supreme Leader's office and lock up literally billions of dollars more of assets. Along with that action today, we are also announcing specific actions targeting those responsible for recent activities. I think, as you know, previously we have sanctioned Soleimani for his behavior. Along with that, today I am going to announce three of his other senior leaders. Tank Siri, who is responsible for the Iranian regime's forces threatening to close the Strait of Hormuz. Haji Day, who is the commander of the Air Force and responsible for downing the U.S. unmanned aircraft in international airspace, as long as Pakpour, who is responsible for IRGC's ground forces. Along with those, we are also designating five naval districts leaders, Kolam Shahi, Zirahi, Yolad Badin, Mansour Ravam Kar, and Ozam Mai. These sanctions are all very important for recent activities. The president has also instructed me that we will be designating Zarif later this week.
All right. So, in summary, basically, I mean, they're hitting Khamenei himself, they're hitting his top officials, and what exactly are they doing? They are freezing any assets that they are able to freeze. And later on in the video, it actually says they are going to be locking up tens of billions of dollars. Tens of billions of dollars. That's just, he didn't list like 1,000 people. He listed just a few people. They are all going to feel this historic executive order. And speaking of executive order 13876, I just want to read a little bit of it, actually just a couple sentences, because it's a government document, and even though it's great policy, it's still a government document. I actually have read the Iran nuclear deal, and I can tell you the Iran nuclear deal is a wonderful, wonderful deal if you have insomnia. All you got to do, print out the deal, put it by your bed, and if you can't sleep, just start reading the deal. I guarantee you, you'll be asleep in like 5 seconds. Oh my gosh, that was torture to read. But I digress. Okay, Executive Order 13876, where we get to what they're actually doing. So this is Section 1A. It says that all property and interests in property that are in the United States, so it's their property assets, interests here in the United States that hereafter come within the United States or that are hereafter come within the possession or control of any United States person of the following persons are blocked and may not be transferred, paid, exported, withdrawn, or otherwise dealt in. And it was all the people that goes on to list all the people that Steve Mnuchin just said. So this is it's a very powerful order. Again, it's historic. And ladies and gentlemen, the United States has a president. Isn't that a beautiful, beautiful thing? And just to end off on this particular topic, I got to share this clip from Meet the Press. There's always the John Bolton question, right? I remember when John Bolton was appointed as National Security Advisor. I'm like, okay, this should be interesting. I like John Bolton in some sense, but I kind of don't in another sense. So, you know, I had mixed feelings about him, and I still kind of do. That being said, I alluded to this earlier, but this is very interesting. Chuck Todd of Meet the Press asks Donald Trump kind of about this very thing. So let's go ahead and play that.
Do you feel like you were being pushed into military action against Iran by any of your advisors?
I have two groups of people. I have doves and I have hawks.
Yeah, you have some serious hawks.
I have
hawks.
Some hawks. Oh, yeah, John Bolton is absolutely a hawk. It's up to him. He'd take on the whole world at one time, okay? But that doesn't matter because I want both sides. You know, some people said, why did you put, you know, I was against going into Iraq for years and years. And before it ever happened, I was against going into Iraq. And some people said, oh, I don't know. I was totally against. And I was a private citizen. It never made sense to me. I was against going into the Middle East. Chuck, we've spent $7 trillion in the Middle East right now.
So that's very interesting here. Trump kind of confirmed what we all thought. But that being said, like I said earlier, it's good for him to have some both opinions and sides, multiple opinions and sides, so we can weigh his options and hopefully come to the right decision, which it appears that he did in this instance. All right. So all that to say, that is essentially where things stand with Iran at the moment. Now, we need to talk deal or opportunity of the century for a second, as Kushner has redubbed it. I'm coming upon an hour pretty close here, and I'm trying to keep it at that. So we're going to hit some highlights. But I do want to mention a piece of legislation out of Washington that I really like that will never, ever, ever pass this session because the Democrats seem to love propping up and supporting brutal dictators like Castro, Maduro, Khomeini, etc. But this is from Insider New Jersey. Gottheimer calls for passage of bipartisan bill to stop corrupt Iranian oligarchs and entities. And essentially what this is, House H.R. 1441, and it says, Iran must cease its reckless and aggressive conduct, which has only increased tensions and further destabilized the region. In addition to being the world's leading state sponsor of global terrorism, Iran continues to enrich corrupt regime-connected officials back at home. Congress can send a strong message to Iran by passing the bipartisan legislation to shed light on Khomeini's regime corruption, distortion, and mismanagement of Iran's economy. H.R. 1441 determines Iranian oligarchs and foreign political figures according to their closeness to the Iranian regime and their net worth. So basically, it's targeting people that are close to this corrupt administration. It is targeting those people. So I think H.R. 1441 is a great ideal. It's supposedly bipartisan. Maybe there's a few Democrats that have latched onto it. We will see. But if it did pass the House, I would be very, very happy, but not expectant right now. Okay, we're going to have to talk deal of the century real quick, which is not something I want to do. So consider like the last 10 minutes of this broadcast a just very shallow, if you'll forgive me, a very shallow overall summary of this thing. But I'm just going to kind of hit some highlights. So there was a conference in Bahrain Tuesday and Wednesday of this week, June 25th and 26th. If you're not familiar, Bahrain is a tiny island country in the Persian Gulf. It's off the northwest coast of Qatar, kind of sandwiched between Qatar and Saudi Arabia. Again, look it up. But prior to that conference, while I was coming back from my cruise, Kushner released the economic portion of his deal of the century. I think it was on like the 13th or 14th. Why did he do that? Well, this particular summit in Bahrain was an economic summit designed as a series of speeches, meetings, focused on investment in what is diabolically called, in my opinion, the occupied territories of West Bank and Gaza. They are not occupied. They are disputed. But that's another matter. Interestingly, Israel was not invited, and the Palestinian Arabs boycotted the conference. And my understanding is that because the Arabs boycotted the conference, that's why Israel was not invited. I don't agree with that, actually, at all. Maybe there's a reason why. But look, if Israel is going to act in a good faith effort to talk to the Arabs, and it's just the Arabs that are acting in bad faith to boycott the thing, well, why should Israel be excluded? But that's basically where Kushner pushed the economic portion of the peace plan for the first time. Again, the political portion of the peace plan is going to be sometime in probably late September after the Israeli elections. That is going to be released. But so I was going to go over a few articles, actually, but I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to do for you guys, I'll have the plan linked up at MideastNewsBrief.com if you want to actually read it. It really is kind of like a glorified brochure. It's kind of funny. I was really expecting more like a typical black letter on white paper type document, and really it's like a 40-page, nicely put together brochure. But there are really two major parts to the plan. The first part is called Unleashing Economic Potential. The second part is called Empowering the Palestinian People. And of course, and a third part, Enhancing Palestinian Governance. So it does delve into some politics a little bit in this plan, but underneath Unleashing Economic Potential, they talk about building a foundation for growth and business investment, opening up the West Bank and Gaza through business investment, constructing essential infrastructure, power, water, digital services. They talk about 4G, 5G in there. The promoting private sector growth, so tourism, agriculture. I mean, anybody, you want to go to the West Bank? You know, maybe you do, maybe, but it's not. It's definitely not a hot tourist spot. Tourism, agriculture, housing, manufacturing, natural resources, regional development and integration. I mean, there's a whole lot of things like that. So you got the overall vision. I'm sorry, you've got the really unleashing the economic potential, which, I'll wait. I'm going to get to that in a second, because ultimately there are some unbelievable hurdles to implementing this plan. Now, again, I'm never going to say never when it comes to Trump. Never going to say never, because who knows, right? Maybe this is something that God wants to implement, and it's God's will to do it. And I mean, we've seen what I believe is God working through Trump the past 2 years. So that being said, there are some huge obstacles. All right. So the second part, empowering the Palestinian people by enhancing education services, empowering them by strengthening workforce development, by investing in healthcare, by improving quality of life. Trying to make the culture itself a more enjoyable and kind of fruitful place to live. So they talk about like arts and culture, sports and athletics, municipal services, and then enhancing Palestinian governance. So they've got here creating a better business environment, property rights, legal and tax framework, capital markets and monetary policy, international trade, those types of things. They've got a section on institution building. So here you get into the political realm. Some here, they're talking about judicial independence. That, of course, is a problem in many, 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 many areas in the Middle East, especially. Erdogan in Turkey has an iron grip over his judiciary. So that would certainly need to be fixed. If because ultimately, and a whole lot through this plan, and I did read through a lot of it, but and I kind of skipped around to stuff that was just kind of fluff and I knew wasn't actual substance. And that's the thing in this plan. There is, you know, a lot of talk and what we would call fluff, but probably stuff that still needs to be said in some form or fashion. But when it comes to the actual, this is what we're going to do. So they have, you know, they have a short section, and then they have these, what is it called? Breakout venture. So they have a blue section. After they talk about something, they have a blue section breakout venture where they then actually talk about the projects that they want to accomplish. So certain projects that they want to do. What I've read, they're looking at about trying to get $50 billion in private investment into the West Bank and Gaza. It's a noble plan. Well, what I like about it, they're not talking about $50 billion, you know, going over to these terrorist regimes, which the Palestinian Authority and Hamas are terrorist regimes. So I like that. I guess, you know, the question is, again, how are we going to be able to implement this in a culture that is not exactly friendly or warm, not just to the U.S., but to Israel? That's what we're going to have to see. So they have these, you know, so they go through. So if you do download the plan, scroll down to like and you'll see a big blue kind of rectangular section where it has all the breakout ventures. And that's where you really get into, okay, like, for example, this one. The project is startup equity matching and lending facilities. And that's the whole idea, is to get money flowing in to small business owners, to entrepreneurs, and so forth, that can then stimulate the economy. So, and it talks about their financing and the project overview and so forth. So if you want a good idea of the plan, but don't want to read the whole thing, just go down to read the foreword and then read the different breakout ventures. All right, so I'm skipping over a whole lot that I was planning on getting to. But that being said, I think ultimately when it comes to the peace plan, right? And I've said this, many, many times on this broadcast, the Palestinian leadership themselves, they got to buy into this plan. And they didn't even go to the conference. The absolute only way that they are going to accept any kind of Trump plan is if they are forced to by their Arab neighbors. And that's another thing. This plan isn't just about the West Bank and Gaza. It also brings in a lot of money to Lebanon, Egypt, and Jordan. And from what it looks like, it is in all three of those countries' best interests to accept this plan. Their economies will be stimulated in a pretty powerful way. So what I think what Kushner did, Greenblatt and Friedman, their team did, was very smart. Because if you're just depending on the PA to accept any kind of U.S. plan, it will never happen. They've been rejecting peace plans since the 1930s. They're not interested. They'll reject a peace plan, giving them everything they want, and they'll turn around and start an intifada against Israel. So what do? you send a lot of money to their friends and hope that the friends will coerce them into this. That's really, ultimately, from what I can see, and of course I have very limited scope of this, from what I can see, that's the only way this thing has a chance. If they can somehow be coerced, then they'll have to do it. And look, I agree. I agree that if you can stimulate an economy, that on some level, there would be less terrorism. I think probably a lot of terrorism happens because they're in poverty. And because they're in poverty, you have the terrorist regimes come and say, okay, you go and blow up some Jews, we'll give you a pension for life. We'll give your family pension for life. If you die, your family will be taken care of. This is pay for slay. This is currently going on right now in Israel as they're meeting in Bahrain to talk about stimulating the economy of the West Bank and Gaza, the PA is continuing their pay-to-slay policy. It is a bizarre, bizarre world we live in, but unfortunately, that is the reality. So I agree that, yes, if you stimulate economy, you have a better economy, less people will engage in terrorism. I don't know how much less. But that being said, ultimately, the culture must change. The culture must change. Look, they put terrorist names on buildings and their schools. They'll even, I mean, they're, because Israel has been freezing money going to them, whatever amount they're, you know, hundreds, $150 million a year, whatever they're spending on their pay to slay policy, Israel freezes the same amount of money of that to try to get them to stop it. But they won't. They said, like, we will, that is their number one domestic spending priority, is taking care of families of the quote-unquote martyrs. That is what Abbas has said. We will give our last cent to this before anything else, including there was a child that was dying from cancer. A child that was dying from cancer that they put pay to slay over. This is who we're dealing with. Again, throwing money at problems. We're not throwing money, all right? They're trying to teach a man to fish rather than give a man a fish, and I like that a whole lot. But ultimately, money is not the fixer of problems, so we'll see what they do with the political situation. I mean, if I know anything about Trump, I mean, I know he wants to be successful in this and actually be successful, not just game the system for some kind of personally financially beneficial result. So who knows? This very well could be implemented by some miracle. Again, I've learned to not underestimate the power of the Trump train. But then there's part two of the plan, the political plan. And let me tell you something. If Kushner's plan proposes a Palestinian state, this whole thing is dead. It will never happen. The Palestinian Arabs will never allow it, much less the Israelis. The leadership wants permanent victim status so they can continue to demonize Israel in international courts and receive aid money, international aid money that Abbas and his cronies can siphon off to enrich themselves. Now, my understanding from what I've seen, it doesn't seem to be the case that they're going to introduce a Palestinian state, which is a good thing because you don't want to give a terrorist regime power. But we'll have to wait and see, again, probably till the second half of September. All right, and that will do it for this week's edition of Mideast News Brief. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcasting app and even donate to Mideast News Brief if you so feel led. Remember to visit MideastNewsBrief.com for the show notes and links to articles referenced in this broadcast. Thanks again for joining us. And remember, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they prosper those who love you. And of course, for the entire Middle East, and that God's kingdom comes to the whole earth. Bye, guys. Have a good week.